This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org.
Tax and spend.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Maybe people are spending those tax rebate checks after all. Retail sales were much better than expected in May, according to the government this morning. Sales increased a full percent. That's the biggest jump since November. Analysts were only expecting a 0.5% increase. Wall Street likes it when people buy things. Shares are up more than a percent so far on Wall Street. The Dow has gained 138 points already to 12,222. The NASDAQ has put on 37, and the S&P 500 is up 13. In Europe, 0.5% gain so far. The markets in Asia fell about 2% for the day. Here's something else that has Wall Street abuzz. A Belgian beer company has made an offer to buy Anheuser-Busch, the home of Budweiser. This bid is gigantic, $65 a share. If the deal goes through, it would be the third largest foreign takeover of a U.S. company ever. Our European correspondent Stephen Beard has more.
InBev, which makes Stella Artois, is offering $46.9 billion for Anheuser-Busch in cash. InBev borrowed the money. In spite of the credit crunch, banks are still willing to lend for the right deal. Anheuser-Busch says it'll consider the offer, but analysts expect the company to reject it. It's likely to get a pretty hostile reception in the brewer's home state of Missouri. Understandably so, says Scott Muller of the Cass Business School. Most takeover deals involve big job losses.
The average deal has something on the order of 10 to 15% of the employees of the target company being fired. If you take those numbers, that would be huge, certainly back in St. Louis as well as other places in the United States where Anheuser-Busch has its operations.
InBev has tried to ease those fears. It says if the takeover goes ahead, it will keep the headquarters in St. Louis and that it has no plans to close down any American breweries. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
News of this beer deal even gave the dollar a lift today. So oil prices are falling. They're at about $133 a barrel. U.S. carmakers are scrambling to adapt to the new reality of energy prices. Here's Ford's latest idea, according to the Wall Street Journal. Switch some assembly lines from trucks and SUVs to cars. Sounds like a no-duh kind of thing, but it's really not. Here's Ashley Milne-Tite.
It won't be easy for Ford to revamp their assembly lines. George Magliano directs North American automotive industry research for Global Insight.
You don't press a button in an auto assembly plant and all of a sudden start switching from trucks to cars.
He says not only will Ford have to develop new models to be built in the repurposed plants, there's the physical overhaul of assembly lines too, all of which could take many months. Magliano says the changeover will affect jobs and work rules.
But the bottom line on this, where I would see the union going along with it, if they can't switch the product and they can't sell the existing product, well, these plants and jobs are going to go away.
He says Ford is taking a dramatic step, but given the cost of oil, it's the right one. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Thursday, June 12th on Marketplace.org. With food prices where they are, the last thing we needed was a summer of flooding in the Midwest. But it looks like that's what we're going to get. Early this morning, a lock and dam on the Mississippi River was closed to barge traffic. There are 9 of these locks, and they'll all be closed eventually if water levels keep rising. The economic toll of shutting down the Mississippi cannot be underestimated. Small towns all over the Midwest are already feeling squeezed by the floods. Maureen McCollum reports from Wisconsin Public Radio.
The southwestern Wisconsin town of Ontario is usually lush and green this time of year. It's Kickapoo River, a big tourist draw for canoers and kayakers. Now, everything appears mucky and brown. Colin Winchell works at Drifty's Canoe Rentals.
You stand on this bridge and look down the water, you'll see canoes in the trees and canoes stuck in fences.
The Kickapoo's water is still so high and so dangerous that no one knows when the tourists will return. Ontario's village president puts preliminary damage at $2 million, a lot for a town of 500. The damage to the county's agriculture, hay, corn, and soybeans, is estimated at $5.5 million. But it could be worse. About 60 miles to the east, the man-made Lake Delton was completely drained when floodwaters breached its dam. Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle.
There are 22 lodges that are on that lake that had people booked all summer long to go there.
The flood's full economic impact throughout the Midwest isn't clear, but FEMA will continue to assess the value of the damage over the next few days. In La Crosse, Wisconsin, this is Maureen McCollum for Marketplace.
Executives from Microsoft are in Africa today. They're working with the United Nations to open a new business, the Uganda Green Computer Company. Gretchen Wilson reports from Johannesburg.
The idea is that Western companies will donate their 3 to 4 year old computers to this upstart business in Uganda's capital, Kampala. Technicians there will recondition and resell them. Will Poole is a vice president with Microsoft.
A PC purchased from the Uganda Green Computer Company might cost between a third and a half of what that PC would cost new.
Starting at $175. That's more affordable to small businesses like dressmakers and coffee farmers. They'll use the computers to manage orders and income and reach out to new markets. Poole says this means new markets for Microsoft products, too. Each computer is loaded up with genuine Windows software.
In the short term, we may not make any direct returns on some of these efforts, but in the long term, we are unquestionably building future customers.
The Uganda Green Computer Company plans to restore 10,000 PCs this year, and when these computers reach the true end of their useful life, the firm will take them back for recycling. In Johannesburg, South Africa, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
1 million people worldwide die from malaria every year. More organizations are collecting money for things like mosquito nets to help protect people in parts of Africa and Asia. But in Seattle, some people have decided to get the disease themselves in order to help. Oregon Public Broadcasting's Ethan Lindsay has more.
This is our insectary.
Think of this place as a malaria hotel. But instead of paying nightly rates, guests will get compensated several thousand dollars for their stays. That's because these accommodations will include mosquitoes infected with malaria.
We put the mosquitoes into a small ice cream container. Just put that next to somebody's skin and the mosquitoes will feed on their skin.
Dr. Patrick Duffy could be considered the innkeeper. His actual job title is the director of the malaria program at the Seattle Biomedical Research Institute.
That's where the dissection of the mosquitoes are done.
It's one of the world's top malaria research centers. That's in large part due to the Gates Foundation. They've donated $350 million to the development of a malaria vaccine. Malaria can cause flu-like symptoms and is often deadly. Duffy says a vaccine is now possible and would save millions of lives.
The reason that people are interested in this is their awareness of the suffering. And to be presented in our community, Seattle, where we don't have any malaria, with the opportunity to do something, I think that that inspires people.
He says he thinks some volunteers are interested in a quick, though not necessarily painless, $1,000 payday. The lab will give subjects a trial vaccine and then infect them with malaria. Duffy says for a week, people can go to work, ride the bus, sleep next to their spouses. Then they get put up in the hotel. If the vaccine doesn't work, they'll be given a drug that will cure them. Duffy says his lab has gone the extra mile to ensure safety. But despite the safeguards, volunteers shouldn't think it's just another way to make a buck. Or so says Buddy Ullman, a malaria researcher at Oregon Health and Sciences University.
People are getting paid a lot of money to get exposed to the malarial parasite, and some of these people will get sick. The listeners do not want to acquire falciparum malaria. That's not a fun disease.
Seattle Biomedical Research Institute says it hopes to begin formal trials by next year. Interested? It's still accepting volunteer applications. In Seattle, I'm Ethan Lindsay for Marketplace.
Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said this week, the economy's probably not headed for a severe downturn, and inflation is the Fed's number one concern. When I say inflation, I don't mean gas and food prices alone. Inflation is an overall increase in prices, when a dollar doesn't buy as much anymore. With that in mind, time to visit with our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Everybody's worried about inflation coming, Chris, except you. Why?
Well, what is happening to people's budgets right now? $4 a gallon gasoline, higher food costs. You take those things out of retail sales, guess what? Retail sales are weak. People are spending less. They don't have the money. The money they have is being absorbed by higher food and energy costs. You're not going to get a surge in inflation in the kind of weak economy that we have right now.
So then why is the Fed talking about the dollar and President Bush talking about the dollar and inflation?
Well, what they're doing actually is one of the reasons why I'm very optimistic about inflation. There is a concern. And so what the Fed is doing is it's talking a tough game. Maybe it raises its rates. Maybe it doesn't. But tell me that inflation is going to take off when central bankers around the world are united in their concern about inflation. It's almost a self-defeating forecast. They're worried about it. They're going to act against it. Therefore, we're not going to get it.
Chris, you also mentioned to me about the bond market and that you can watch that to look for signs of inflation or how investors are treating inflation. What is that telling us right now?
What inflation? One way of measuring the market's anticipation of inflation rate is to take a look at the 10-year Treasury yield, and then you look at the yield on Treasury inflation-protected securities. And the difference between those two is what the market is anticipating the inflation rate will be over 10 years. Market's anticipating 6%? No. 5%? No. Turns out market's anticipating 2.4%. That's essentially the rate the market's been anticipating for about the past 3 years. Hmm. And investors are saying, yeah, we might have a little bit of higher prices right now, but the Fed is acting and inflation is just simply not a big deal.
Well, Chris, you made a very good argument. Although when you go to the gas station and the grocery store, it doesn't make you feel any better.
No, it doesn't. It makes you feel a lot poorer.
All right, Chris Farrell, our economics correspondent. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Some small piece of good news about gas prices. The Energy Department says they will probably top out this summer at $4.15 a gallon. But gas will stay above $4 for most of the year. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.